All right, I'm your host, Lawrence America. This is Geeks of the Square Table, episode 167, and with me today is...
Taylor.
And Adam.
And not Jules.
Not Jules.
Never Jules.
Oh, is that the first one thing right there?
Wait.
Right there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is...
Yep. Oh, speaking of Swamp Thing, did you guys read The Brave and the Mold last week?
I did.
That was really good.
And I really enjoyed the name.
Yeah. It was both the most Tom King-ish and the best issue from Tom King's run so far, I would say.
Tom King is really good at writing for the single individual issue. All of his books always seem like they're just... Like, he writes it for the person who buys them in single issues. He's not writing for a trade.
Yeah.
It always feels like. Which is interesting, because you don't really see that a lot nowadays. Everybody's always writing for the trade. That's how Image makes all of its money. Is off of trade.
I guess, would this issue appear in the I Am Bane trade, or would it...
Probably in the next one after.
Okay, so it'll just be like a standalone chapter at the beginning of the next one?
A lot of the DC books are in like a weird transitional period right now, because a lot of them are ending their arcs, but they're not starting new arcs until the 25-issue mark, which is... They're all going to be a little bit longer in the issue 25. I think they're a dollar more for issue 25. Like, Batman, it's not starting out its real next arc until 25.
That's supposed to be the War of Jokes and Riddles, right?
Yes.
They've been building that up a little bit, no?
Yeah. And it's also, like, the first real in-continuity Joker appearance in Rebirth. We haven't really seen him since...
This is true. Since Endgame, right?
Yes, since Endgame.
Which, you know, it was, I mean, good to have a little break. You know,
it's the good way to approach it. You don't want to do the Bendis approach where you use the same character nonstop for, like, 3 years and everyone is just sick to death of him after a while.
Yeah.
Like the Hood, or Norman Osborn.
Well, and, you know, we're 20 issues in, 22, 23?
23, yeah.
Yeah, I think 22 was last week's Batman issue.
And they've been doing bi-weekly for those. Are we going to see something happen at issue 52 where they, I mean, they all go by? Or?
Well, they're doing the Watchmen event.
Yeah.
Sometime.
Soon. I wouldn't hold out too much faith on any book ever getting to 52 issues ever again, but, you know.
I don't know, but with DC it's possible.
More so than with Marvel, though.
Oh, yes, definitely more so than Marvel. But Marvel's going back to all of its original numbering.
Yeah, but it doesn't really... They've done that before, and it doesn't really mean that much.
It doesn't mean anything, but...
Numbering doesn't really mean anything anymore ever since Action Comics and Detective Comics got off of their original numbering.
Well, those were the ones on their original numbering.
Well, but they were the ones with the unbroken streak going up to the 900s. And now that that's no longer the case, you know, even if they go back to that, I'm sure when they get to issue 1,000.
Yeah, the only reason they went back to their original numbering is because they're so close to 1,000.
Yeah, and I understand that, but it doesn't mean as much to me. That since, you know, the streak got broken already.
Because there was 52 issues that... Where they broke the streak and they went and renumbered it.
Well...
Oh, well.
And, you know,
Which, I can't really blame them because, you know, number ones are an obvious place for new readers to jump on, and I imagine they sell better.
When you look at the grand scheme of things, if they go back to the original and 1,000 issues and you have 52 of them are misnumbered.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That's 5% have a different number. You look at, I mean, even Spider-Man, for example, how many times did it switch number?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, several dozen times, yeah. But,
yeah.
Well, not several dozen, but a lot.
What, Deadpool, like, then jump to its number of appearances or something for an issue?
So they'd be on issue 7 million right about now.
Well, I mean, I think they... I forget what appearance... They did a big deal when he had reached, you know, I think 900 appearances or something crazy like that. Yeah, but I noticed that cover because that actually that first Swamp Thing we sold a copy of that.
Did you?
Yeah, a while back.
If I'd known you had that, I probably would have bought that.
We sold it as like $300-$400 or whatever.
Wow.
A little old lady that I used to work at a CVS pharmacy, and a little old lady that was our regulars had it chilling in her attic. Now,
that's usually where you find stuff like that. So.
It was just, That's the only other,
That's how the story usually goes, it was tucked away in some box somewhere and completely forgotten about.
Yeah, so. And there was a bunch of other stuff from that era, the 12 cent era too, but it was no mainline stuff. It was all just, horror mystery type stuff, and that was, of course, the big one, So, I've actually read a copy of that issue cover to cover. Which was nice, it's one of the things.
Did you bust out, the tongs and, like latex gloves and stuff, or?
I actually, believe it or not, at one point I used to have them up here, have cotton film gloves.
Oh.
Now, from my studies as a photographer.
Wow.
Which is supposed to be less damaging than latex gloves.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
That is a neat little thing to come across. I'm glad I have it for you, Larry.
Yeah. So, one of the few that I've been fortunate enough to. Oh, hey, yeah. And of course, there was a guy who came in the other day. And I know I've told y'all off the podcast. The guy came in with some grocery bags full of like a Wonder Woman number one and a couple of
bags?
Yes, Kroger's bag. I just bought these offline. Are they worth anything? Are they worth what I paid for them?
When you say Wonder Woman number one,
I mean Wonder Woman number one, like Sensational Comics one.
So like from the 1940s.
Yes.
Wow.
Like he goes, is this? This is a $10,000 book. Yeah, and it's like, did I overpay? Will you grade this? I'm afraid to touch this. I mean, just like, what do you? And he had bought a run of Batman or Detective Comics in the 30s or something, like 30 something through that.
Batman appeared, I think, first in 1939.
No, like number 30 through 40. It's just right in there.
Okay.
It's like...
Well, Batman's first appearance was Detective Comics number 27.
Right. So it wasn't his first appearance, but they were still... Close. Yeah.
No, I mean, those are still super valuable. I mean, nothing can ever eclipse a character's first appearance, but...
Yeah,
that's still pretty nice.
It was just crazy. These grocery bags are like 30 books, and every one of them was four figures or more, and I'm like... Like even if you paid a little high based on their condition, these aren't going to be books you're going to be finding more of.
I mean, theoretically, if you did get your hands on one of these books, they're only going to go up in value, assuming that you keep them in good condition.
That's what I told him. If you have these kept in good condition, because more and more are going to deteriorate, you had them graded, they are going to be solid long-term investments. But and that's what he was some doctor or something.
So don't carry them around in grocery bags.
Was
he able to get his hands on some poly bags from you or something? Or?
They were in, like, the person he bought them from had shipped them in, melanined or, was it the fancy non-acid?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, the archival bags. And some rigid bags, and he had apparently opened them at the post office or wherever he got them, and just, I got a grocery bag in there. It was just the craziest thing, it was like, just came walking in. Ah.
But just to put my mind at ease, he didn't transport them in such a condition that he utterly ruined them, right?
They were in decent shape.
Okay.
Are decent rigid containers, but... to see him just walk out with them back in the grocery bags, it
doesn't give you much faith.
No, I tried to give him a box.
Well,
Did you try to give him a box, or did you try to sell him a box?
No, I tried to give him a box.
See, it's bad if players even trying to give you something, because...
Yeah.
Because, you know, at that point, it was more than just comics. They're little pieces of history.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, yeah, even if you don't give two figs about a superhero comic, it's, you know, those are legit artifacts at this point, more or less.
Yeah, I ended up sending some pictures to Mark and everything. It was pretty crazy. And it's fun just to, you know, get to see stuff like that every so often. Yeah, and if you go online, speaking of rare artifacts, somebody a while back auctioned Action Comics number 1, and they took a high-res scan of every page and made a PDF or whatever. So I know if you Google search Sotheby's Action Comics number 1, I think you can still find a PDF. Yeah, and that was a neat read for any y'all Superman fans out there. Yeah, but anyway, enough for my crazy ranting. I was saying, do we think the rebirth is going to be around for a longer haul? I mean, the New 52 had a 5-year run, pretty much. That one.
Rebirth was a lot more steam than New 52 did, so I don't see it going away. I mean, they might rebrand it after this Doomsday Clock event, but I don't think they'll renumber anything or relaunch anything again.
Well, and I'm, you know, from they've done this Rebirth line. Like, even the way they print the trades and everything, it's...
Yeah, it's true. There's a DC-wide imprint that they use on all the trades nowadays.
And I really like that. That's great for the consumers. We go, oh, hey, these are... go with this. They stand out on the shelves, you know.
Anything to make it easier for people to figure out what to read is great.
I mean, yeah, that's the biggest thing about getting into comics is... where the hell do you start? Even with the whole, like, number ones, you know, you start there. Even then, usually, no, not really.
Right. And a lot of times, those number ones aren't even really that good of jumping on points.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, it's, yeah. I mean, you still, well, read this number one, but read this number one on before you get to that number one, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
Now,
At a certain point, though, if you're going to get into it, you just kind of have to roll with the punches for a while.
Yeah, I mean...
Right.
When I was first reading comics, there was reference after reference that I do not understand, so there's a lot of trips to Wikipedia. But after a while, you get enough of a framework where the things you don't know are fewer and far between, and then you just kind of roll with it. It's kind of overwhelming at first, but you just got to hang in there.
Yeah. You just kind of go with, have to be confused for a while, you know. And once you get a better, you figure out where to go look for these resources and everything, because there's tons of stuff online that you can find all the resources that you need and all that jazz to know what you need to know, but to understand the character and all that. But really, most time it's just finding a new character you enjoy and just... you don't have to know the backstory of everything to understand. It just, it does seem like it rewards you more, but, it's bad storytelling if it isn't, if I can't pick up any single trade and get a good story in at least that trade, it'd be nice if you could pick up any single issue and get a good story in that issue and just be able to understand what's going on at that moment in that time in those pages.
Fortunately, we don't really have that. But yeah, it's still nice though when the publishers make it easier for you to figure out where to start and where to go. Because I mean, DC does a good job of numbering their trades. They do a good job of showing you where to start. Marvel, I mean, yeah, they do the relaunches every once in a while for new number ones, but like if you try to figure out what trade you need to read for something, Marvel's trades are really bad about not numbering. They're really bad about...
It just makes it hard on everybody. You know, especially like you've got Thor, good stories. You got God Butcher, God Bomb, and God of Thunder. But if you are those trades even numbered, or they're just called? There's one trade.
They started numbering them at that point. But like if you try to read any old Spider-Man book, none of them are numbered at all. So you're gonna have to look at the look inside of it to try to figure out what the numbers or the issues are, and then have to look for the next trade by doing the same thing, just going by the shelf. And there's no telling if you actually have the next trade.
With
both Spider-Man and Thor, there's always the possibility that one quote-unquote story, or at least one writer's take on the character, extends to multiple titles. Like with Thor, it started off Thor God of Thunder, then it was just Thor, now it's like the Mighty Thor, all of which are effectively one contiguous story. And then, like, Spider-Man, it might lead over from Amazing Spider-Man to Spectacular Spider-Man to Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man back in the day, you know.
Well, and then even...
The Web of Spider-Man.
And something like the new 52 Batman, you know, there's certain points when that story jumps from title to title, and... Yeah, you know, there's the one trade, Night of the Owl, which gives you tie-ins for everybody else, and then...
It gives you tie-ins, but if you just want to follow the main story, you can still just read Batman, and you'd still understand what's going on.
Where something like the Star Wars crossovers...
You have to get all the titles.
Yeah.
Which
they're DC has picked that up with the Lazarus event. Yeah, they're doing it just like they did with the Darth Vader, like Vader Down was the first one. Or the other one that's ringing is Black Vortex. That was a big one. Where
Black Vortex was horrible. That was terrible.
Well, and that was one where it was just a pain to figure out what they were supposed to. You know, the customers were trying to read next.
With this Lazarus contract, it makes sense because it's Deathstroke, Titans, and Teen Titans. Those characters have been tied together forever, you know? But like with Black Vortex, it was jumping between like Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy, a Cyclops book, I think Captain Marvel was involved at one point. It was jumping all over the place.
Yeah. That one was a bit of a mess. I'm glad that I wasn't on board for that one, because it sounds like it would have been a huge headache.
It was not... One of Marvel's favorite things to do for their events is they have an Alpha book and an Omega book that are super thick and super expensive. Black Vortex had that too.
And that's what got a lot of people. The danger of them doing it with the Star Wars events, there are people that started reading the new Star Wars comics that had never read any comics. So especially when Vader Down happened, there were people who were reading Darth Vader who didn't know they needed to get the Vader Down to be able to read, to understand what was going on in this story.
That did have some carryover into the main Darth Vader book, because that's when Dr. Aphra got taken by the Rebels.
Yeah.
So yeah, it had actual consequences that they should have been aware of.
Yeah, because, it was, Vader Down, Star Wars, then Vader, then Star Wars, then Vader again, yeah.
Yeah.
And I get why they do the crossovers, try and get people into the other titles and everything.
They're doing something similar now with Screaming Citadel. But, I mean, they've all been great, so I'm not going to complain too much. But I can understand, I can sympathize with a comic novice trying to keep track of all the shit.
Yeah, mainly Rainforest.
Screaming Citadel is weird so far.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get over the fact that the Evil Queen looks like Harley Quinn.
Space vampires, right?
That's yeah, what space it is. Vampires who look like clowns. And Luke being...
It's a very yeah. comic booky Star Wars story.
Yeah. I mean, it's been fine.
I mean, it's been fine. I've been enjoying it. I just think it's very weird.
I guess when you describe it like that, it might lose a lot of people. Yeah.
I'm just putting this up back. I'm going to run outside to have a
Luke Skywalker and Space Indiana Jones have to deal with space vampires.
Space vampires, yeah.
That's not an inaccurate description of the event so far. Oh, man.
Well, speaking of Star Wars...
happy 40th anniversary.
Yeah, happy 40th anniversary.
For the release of New Hope. Or just Star Wars, I guess it was called at the time.
It's just Star Wars.
Yeah. Yay!
Yay! 10 more years and we can celebrate the one that matters.
This is true. I mean, the golden anniversary is the
by then,
big headline.
By then, they'll be working on Star Wars 11. Episode 11.
Yeah.
Are they going to keep the episodes going?
I don't know.
I hope not. I hope that they stop at episode 9. Theoretically, that's the part that George Lucas envisioned way back then was a 9-part story.
Because he doesn't care what George Lucas envisioned.
True. And there is still the ongoing debate about how much they should care, considering how fucked up
the prequel trilogy was, yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say fucked up, because it's not like it was, like, weird or anything. It's how fucking terrible the prequel trilogy was.
At which point do they reboot Star Wars?
No, I don't think they could... I don't think the fan base would ever let them hear the end of that. Although they'd probably wouldn't care if the fan base was still going to see the movie, so fuck
well, right now if they said we're gonna remake a Phantom Menace.
Oh well, okay. Actually, you know what? I am on board. When you phrase it like that, if that's their next project after they finish Episode 9, I'm curious about that.
Remake Phantom Menace. More Jar Jar Binks.
Well, no, remake the prequel trilogy, but make it not ass this time. That's a pretty good idea, I think.
More Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, Adam. I'm glad you're not in charge.
Let's make every character Jar Jar Binks.
No, you gotta make every character a different racial stereotype. That's how you do that.
That's what they do already, though, isn't it?
I mean, yeah. I mean, Phantom Menace had more than the one.
How much do I want
to
bet?
They had... Asian stereotypes as well as Jewish stereotypes, yes. In addition to Jar Jar. So, they were equal opportunity discriminators, I guess.
But there's a whole slew of races out there that they didn't get a chance to offend.
True. Okay, so they shouldn't do that. There's a good story to be told there, they just didn't tell it, you know?
More midichlorians.
No. Less midichlorians. So we should do
preferably
all...
no midichlorians.
Yeah, I mean...
What, you mean the Force is an STD? I mean, come on.
Well, you don't have sex to get the Force. It's just,
I mean, on top of it just being...
a random parasite.
On top of it just being a stupid, wonky idea, there's kind of a philosophical complaint about that, because the Force never really had a hard and fast scientific explanation. As indeed, most of Star Wars is not hard and fast with its science. It's more...
It shouldn't be, either. It's fantasy.
It's space fantasy, more so than...
Right. I think we all can agree that the Force would have been better as a mystical force,
yeah. I mean,
you know?
You shouldn't try to hammer in a scientific, especially a stupid scientific explanation, to something that works better when it's vague and mystical.
Right, because it removed the religious aspect out of the Jedi Order, you know?
Yeah.
Having it have a scientific backing. Now,
it also opens up the question, if a vampire killed a Jedi, would they then become a Force Master?
Only why the blood was still pumping through their system. I assume it would be like the True Blood vampires feeding on fairies. They could only have the force for a little while. Because the force is very much life, not death. You figure the midichlorians would leave them. And I've thus inspired somebody's fan fiction right there.
I stopped watching True Blood when the fairies started showing up.
Well, sounds like you missed out on a pretty great reference that Larry just made.
I remember I watched that spoiler alert, and there were fairies blowing stuff up or shooting something or whatever, and I was just done.
It did get pretty out there.
Oh, man. Speaking of HBO, they did release the trailer for Season 7, like the full trailer.
Oh, they released the full trailer? I only saw the little teaser that showed the
They did the teaser date. A short while ago where, like, everybody's, like...
Season like, 7
of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Apparently, it's just all the armies are gathering around King's Landing, and Cersei's like, oh, we're just gonna kick their ass, even though they are outnumbered, like, 40-1.
She doesn't give a shit anymore.
The other side has dragons and better fighters.
All her kids are dead. She doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, that'll be interesting to see is how is it that the Lannisters in King's Landing aren't 145% fucked? Because they seem to be that much fucked.
Are they related to any of the other people outside?
They're related to Tyrion, who is siding with Daenerys. But as far as I know, other than cousins who nobody cares about, that's all the Lannisters that are left. They're almost as rare as Starks these days.
I'm sure that means something to somebody.
Oh, fuck you, Larry. It's a great show.
And one of these days, I might watch it.
You really should. It's good.
There's a lot of rape, but other than that, it's pretty good.
I hear some incest, too.
Oh, there's tons of incest.
Yeah, tons of it.
Thus, are they related to anybody outside? Yeah.
Because
then the other side is just as equally fucked.
Well, all the aforementioned children that Adam mentioned were the products of the incest, and they're all super dead.
Super dead.
Yeah. Which, I guess we have to emphasize that they are actually dead, because apparently on Game of Thrones, that doesn't necessarily stick.
Well, you knew that coming from, like,
true.
The second season or so.
True.
Well, yeah. Other than... Now, it'll probably be well over before I ever watch
well,
any
this,
of it.
Well, this is the second to last season. Wow. It ends at 8.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be shorter seasons, right?
Yeah, there's only supposed to be like 8 episodes in this season, and it's supposed to be even shorter for the next one.
I guess there's just not that much story left to tell, which does beg the question is why the hell is taking George R.R. such a damn long time to write his books?
Because he keeps getting distracted and keeps writing other stuff. He's writing like a short story right now or something.
Dude.
Well, anyhow, so...
See, okay, the problem is, and we've talked about this before, George R.R. Martin could die at any moment now. He doesn't have...
Hey, maybe that's a good thing.
...an unlimited amount of time here.
You know, maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I remember I was reading Wheel of Time, and its writer Robert Jordan died, and he was taking forever to get those books out. And after he died, like 2 years later, they got all the books out. All done. You know, got somebody else to finish it.
Brandon Sanderson, if I recall correctly, finished it.
It wasn't bad.
Well,
that's good.
And, you know, a lot of times the artist type will not let well enough alone.
I know.
And it could be a case of somewhat of that, because supposedly he already knows the plot of the book.
He does know the overall end game, because he has told the Game of Thrones
right.
TV makers what they should do in the event of his death, apparently.
And that's more than Mark Miller could
finish
do.
The show before he's done with the books.
At this point, the certainty that he's going to finish the show before he finishes the books. He had a pretty big head start, but
huge head start.
He squandered it. He squandered his head start.
wrote too many show scripts and short stories.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the last season coming out on Blu-ray or whatever format we use then will come with a coupon for a download of the book.
Nah, there won't be people buy the book.
Yeah, it's true of a lot of authors right now that I have a vested interest in, like Patrick Rothfuss, or however the fuck you say that.
Oh, yeah, that book's taken a while to come out,
King Killer Chronicles, Book 3. Jim Butcher's taking forever with Book 16 of the Dresden Files.
Talking Book 16 versus Book 7.
True. I mean, I guess, yeah, Butcher gets more of a pass because he has put out a lot of material so far, whereas King Killer Chronicles has put out two, and it's...
Two and a half.
Sure.
He put out a short story.
Okay, Butcher put out the 15 books and then several short stories. He's put out half a dozen short stories.
Well, Butcher's also been at the game a lot longer.
I'm just saying, if we're going to count it that way, it doesn't really help the comparison here.
Yeah, but also, how long has Butcher been putting out these books?
I think the first one came out in, like, 2000, so, you know.
Yeah,
until now, he's been at a pretty steady pace.
He's almost had two decades at it.
There are some writers that are just like that, can do three or four books a year, even, you know?
He did also put out another series while writing that, so. It's only lately that it's... apparently crawl to a halt. He got married recently, I think. Like, maybe that, he was busy with that, I guess.
I mean, what's Stephen King's publication, right? Sheesh.
Stephen King is an unfair comparison to anyone.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking quality, I'm just talking sheer quantity.
That's an unfair comparison. The dude has a system that works, I guess, because he pumps those things out.
Now, I mean...
I couldn't possibly name all of his books off the top of my head. He has, like, dozens of them.
Yeah, I couldn't either. And, you know, I have a box of Stephen King books at the house now. And then he, you know, even if you're following his stuff, he writes stuff for, like, secondary publishers and underpinned names and everything. And, like, weird stuff, too. Like,
I think he just never stops writing. He's probably writing right now.
Now, have you read his book on writing?
No, I have not.
It's an interesting read, because he talks about it, like... He talks about never stop writing, you know, and that kind of... he said, you should always be reading. You should be reading more than you write, which means that he's probably got his nose in his book half the time while he's writing. Just because it's your time of day. It talks about learning to write a little bit at a time, as well as sit down and write long pages and everything, you know. And he talks about how he learns from everything he reads. And sometimes it's just learns what a bad idea looks like in print, you know, or... Yeah, I mean, learns other people's mistakes.
Yeah, I mean,
but
that's fair. I mean, learn from successes as well as mistakes.
Yeah, a friend, he gave a list of words, and one example, was a book he'd read. The only thing he learned was to never use this word in a story.
Did he specifically name the story he was throwing under the bus there?
He did. And it was some really old sci-fi from somebody I'd never heard, you know. And it was some sort of, like, bazow or something. You know, weird, noise-sounding word, well,
like
you
a,
know.
Like a Adam West Batman
spot. Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound like a silly thing to put in print.
And apparently the guy used it, like, 30 times.
Stephen King does sound like the wiser of the two here.
But, it was a good read, yeah. Although, I haven't been thrilled with his comics.
Mm.
Now, Joe Hill, he does better, it seems. Which makes me curious to see and wonder if Joe Hill can write books.
Maybe. I don't. The only person I can think of off the top of my head who is widely acclaimed as both a comic writer and a novel writer is probably Neil Gaiman.
That, and you know, he's also widely acclaimed as a script writer too.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman just knows how to write shit, apparently.
He is a master storyteller in any form, yeah. And he's about the only one that really does cross genres like that.
Speaking of, has anybody been watching American Gods yet? I've got the I've got the series recorded. I'm going to sit down and watch it next week since we're out for summer finally. Yeah. But I've been hearing good things.
There you go, students. Your teachers are just as excited about getting rid of you for the summer as you are about getting rid of them.
I'm going to miss my students, but it'll be nice to have some time off for, like, 2 days next week.
Which, they were putting a bit, they had raised the minimum teacher pay in Davidson County.
Nice.
Or... maybe it was Tennessee. Yeah, it was Tennessee. They have a minimum annual salary.
Yeah, well, I figured.
Which is more than minimum wage.
Yeah, I mean, teachers have always made more than minimum wage, but it's worth mentioning that oftentimes we end up having to foot the bill for classroom supplies ourselves.
Right, and yeah, that comes from school budgets and stuff like that. And I remember, going to school, we were asked, bring this and this, and yeah. You need this, 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 this. And then
you
it
can
was...
do that for, like, generic things, like right. Bring Band-Aids or bring, like, paper towels, shit like that that people can actually get their hands on. But if you want something specific, that's on you. You have to find it, order it, and pay for it yourself.
Well, it used to be just like your student would need, you know, this much paper, a notebook, some pencils, and, you know, whatever, some folders. Then it was like, also, cold and flu season, we're going to need all this Kleenexes. And then it was Kleenex and sanitizer. Then Kleenex and I'm going to need some frozen TV dinners, And it was just, the list kept getting longer and longer. And, and it's not the teachers. It's just we don't value education as much as we should in this country. So it seems like that's always, like, an easy one not to fund. That is a discussion for another podcast.
Yeah, another venue.
Yeah. But I just never talked about summer and teachers, and I remember hearing that thing went through.
I guess another news, they dropped the teaser trailer for Castlevania's Netflix show.
Saw that too, yeah.
How's that looking?
Well, it's an anime.
It's pretty cool. It looks a lot like Hellsing Ultimate. But I guess that's to be expected.
Yeah, it looked interesting.
Probably not as gory as that.
I really liked the beginning of it where they had the NES.
Yeah.
Where it looked like they were accessing Netflix through their NES and it had the old...
That was cleverly done. The graphics were on point and good on them.
Speaking of other, streaming services shows, has anybody watched The Handmaid's Tale?
I've heard it's all the rage right now, but no, I don't have that streaming service, so I have not seen it.
I haven't either. I was curious.
I just haven't had the time.
Yeah.
Oh, but speaking of other streaming service things, they did drop the Star Trek Discovery trailer recently.
Yeah. It'll be on Netflix everywhere but here.
Damn!
Here you have to get the CBS streaming service.
I want to watch the show, but I don't know if I want to watch it enough pay for it. And when you already have Netflix,
this is why internet piracy exists.
Yeah, it's hard to justify buying another subscription service just for one show. You know, which is a shame because I want the show to do well and I want to watch it.
I mean,
when you make it difficult to watch your stuff or to find your stuff, it's gonna get stolen. That's the way it is. It's probably gonna top a list of most stolen TV show.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it doesn't come out during Game of Thrones.
Well, I guess it's not.
Game of Thrones has had that title for the last couple of years. But
apparently, the show creators take it as a compliment.
I would too. They still get paid.
Right, well...
Yeah, I guess it's us getting off their ass.
Yeah.
HBO's problem, not theirs.
Well, and really, HBO doesn't care, because they're making a small fortune with licensing and stuff like that. They make their money by getting people to subscribe to the channel. Yeah.
I guess it's not worth them making a stink about it. Like... To create animosity with the fans.
Yeah, realistically, you know, they just go with offering DVDs and Blu-rays and such like that.
The only time it's really a problem is, like, last season where somebody stole, like, the first four episodes and released them, like...
Before it happened?
Yeah, like...
Well, apparently that's a thing that's...
Months before it happened.
Nowadays, a lot of people are, well, not a lot of people, but there's been some high-profile instances lately of hackers getting their hands on TV series early and threatening to release them unless the ransom is paid. What shows did that happen for? It was some Netflix show. I can't recall which one.
Yeah, they said something that Disney got a threat about some movie like that here recently.
Oh, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Oh, you could release that early. Nobody would care.
The people that want to see that in the theater, they're going to see that in the theater anyway.
You haven't gotten your Johnny Depp fill yet.
Pirates of the Caribbean. At the Caribbean.
What are they like
was...
on seven?
No, or this eight? Is five.
This is only five. I never saw the fourth one. The first three were resoundingly watchable.
I saw bits of the fourth.
I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, it was fine.
And the second one, and never saw the end of the third one.
I mean, I'm not gonna knock them, but I'm not gonna like trip over myself about it either. You know.
You know, and now it seems like they're just going to be like the Marvel movies. They're all going to be a solid B, you know.
I wouldn't even put them at a B, though.
Yeah.
C+.
They're like C+, yeah.
They're all very Johnny Depp dependent.
Yeah.
Especially the fourth one, because the fourth one was just Johnny Depp, wasn't it? Like, it didn't even have...
I think so.
It didn't even have... Orlando Bloom or Keira Knightley or any of the other ones.
They probably didn't want to come in for... I mean, they were probably only signed for a three-picture deal.
Probably.
Yeah.
Although apparently they are at least cameoing in this one that's coming out tomorrow.
Huh. Well, yeah, my favorite part of the Pirates movies is they keep putting out Lego pirate ships. So, yay.
That's cool. Oh, speaking of Lego, I think Lego Batman is coming out on DVD soonish, right?
Hope so. If you didn't see it in the theaters, that one was great. You should definitely see it. It's probably the best Batman movie I've seen in a really long time.
Well, and yeah, with the Lego movies...
Probably the best Batman movie I've seen, period. Honestly.
Right, you can make the argument that it really does get Batman pretty well.
They make sure that you can build every scene out of bricks and whatever... and he changed into so many different costumes or whatever during that movie. They had a whole series of blind bag Batman minifigs that were just different Batman outfits from that show. I thought that was neat as a Lego minifig aficionado.
Yeah, pretty nifty.
I was just reminded of those stupid potato head things that apparently are a thing that exist.
Oh, the Mr. Potato Heads?
Yeah.
I'm just waxing nostalgic about that. That was a fun podcast, honestly.
Oh, man.
Well, reading recommendations?
In comics or just, like, in general?
Well, we can do both, I suppose.
I am reading that Kingkiller Chronicles book right now. I'm on the first one still, but I can see why...
They're both great.
I can see why it's so popular. It's good stuff. Comics-wise... I don't know. If you aren't reading Black Panther, that's pretty good.
I dropped Black Panther, actually.
I can understand, because that first arc did take forever.
Took forever, and the guy writing it, he doesn't understand how to write comics. Like, he just doesn't understand the right structure, or I don't know. There's just something about it. There's just something about it that just doesn't doesn't strike me the right way.
It, I guess you can make the argument that it does read more like an illustrated book rather than a comic.
I think it would be, like, I think if he wrote a Black Panther novel, it would be the best, one of the best novels ever. But as a comic book, it just doesn't work.
I'm still enjoying it, but I can understand your complaints.
Well, I mean, that's where he came from originally,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He writes for The Atlantic, and he's also a novelist.
And a certified genius.
Certified?
By who?
Geniuses.
You got some genius brand or something.
I don't know. Maybe, was it Mensa or something? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
I haven't the slightest idea, but... Oh, well. Okay, so my recommendation apparently was shit. So.
No, your recommendation was fine. I could definitely see a lot of people liking that book.
It was not shit. It was just shit on.
Yeah, I could see a lot of people liking Black Panther, and I'm... Hey, good for them. I didn't enjoy it.
And to each his own. You know, we're all allowed to disagree. It's fine.
Yeah. Did you see Hickman actually got 2 books out this week?
What?
I know, right?
Impossible.
I know, right? And one of them was The Dying and the Dead. That book hasn't come out for like a year.
I forgot that existed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet. And I
because it was still on the first story arc.
Next thing
right?
you're gonna tell me is
we only
that
got 3 issues out.
Next thing you're gonna tell me is that his latest issue of the Shield book is coming out.
I know, right?
That's been like, has it been legit like 4 years?
It's
I
been
think?
Like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Because Shield was coming out when he was on Fantastic Four.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I wish they could have finished it.
I
kind of ran.
I don't
out
know
of
why they man, didn't but... finish it.
It seemed like there wasn't that much story left to tell either.
No, there's only like an issue or two left in that thing. I mean, he could just come out with like a graphic novel of it.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't even have to do...
I don't think he even works for Marvel anymore nowadays.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're not on bad terms or anything, but as far as I know, he's not under contract for any books at the moment.
Well, I figured if he was working for Marvel, he would be pumping out books, but
that's true.
Hasn't been.
Well, you know what? Secret Wars was one of the best events I've ever read, if not the best event I've ever read, so he's earned a break.
Oh, definitely. And I don't think anything he could do at Marvel will top what he did in his Secret Wars, Fantastic Four runs.
I mean, that's the cool thing about it, is it does kind of read, from beginning to end, like one big story, starting with Fantastic Four. It's really Reed Richards' story.
Yeah.
The whole time. Oh, well.
The entire Marvel Universe.
In a sense, yeah.
Which, that's going to make Disney mad, since how they don't have the movie rights.
Yet. You got to figure that if Fox takes another shot at it and it bombs again, they've got to cut their losses at some point, right?
At a certain point, they just want to keep it
away from Marvel, you know?
Do it out of spite? I mean... Doesn't make financial sense to sit on a property that doesn't work very well, considering that if you hold on to it, you have to make the movies or you lose the rights. So do you want to waste money on movies? Well, okay, maybe they can make one that's good. I don't know. It's possible. I mean, Fox just kind of seems to,
by accident,
make good movies every now and then. Like
it,
Deadpool,
it doesn't
which,
have to be good. It's just got to look good enough to get people... To buy tickets.
But the last Fantastic Four movie did not even achieve that. Fantastic was both a critical and a financial flop.
Well, you know, maybe Fan 5 Stick will be better for
I hope they call it that. I really should.
So who's the 5th member of the Fantastic Four then?
You know, it's probably going to be fucking Doctor Doom. That's the twist they're going to go with if they
do. Oh, man.
Something like that. Oh, man. That would be a big feather in their cap, though, if MCU did get Fantastic Four, because it could give them something to make movies about after Avengers Infinity War is wrapped up.
Now, and that would be a good time to introduce them, because you've got people used to the cosmic element.
Yep.
Yeah. But, at a certain point, if... Like, Sony has definitely got the the idea, okay, well, let's make a little for nothing versus potentially a lot for a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I know
that the actual Spider-Man movies now are MCU, but I'm confused as to the status of these things. Like, I heard that they're moving forward with a Silver Sable movie.
They're doing a Venom movie.
A Black Cat movie. Oh, actually, Silver Sable and Black Cat apparently are co-headlining that.
Is that going to be MCU?
Not MCU, it's Sony.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. It apparently is... Is it? So can they even use Spider-Man in those
movies
then?
Well, Spider-Man is done with the MCU after... the last Avengers movie that they have announced.
Ah.
After Avengers 4.
Huh.
Spider-Man's gone.
That's lame.
Yeah. So, they're really just using these MCU movies as launching points for their Spider-Man franchise, and then they're just dipping out.
Well, that's weird. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. I guess if the movies are good, they'll be good. If they're not, they're not, but... That is
a pretty weird situation. Why did Disney only half rent them? Yeah, or half lease it? You figure they would want it back for permanent.
Sony's not going to give them Spider-Man back.
They'd have to pay an exorbitant sum for it.
I mean, at one point, Spider-Man was a tentpole, you know, movie franchise for Sony.
He's still, by far, one of the most recognized pop culture icons out of comics.
I mean, before they messed them up with the Amazing Spider-Man movies, the other three Spider-Man movies were making gangbusters.
Well, and that's the thing, the way Marvel...
All the Sam Raimi
ones. I think
they
each held the box office record for a time after they came out.
Well, you know, that's the thing with the pre-Disney Marvel movie contracts. They can't continue. Even if they do another good one, there's only going to be three. And then they're going to have to reboot it. I mean, it's just going to have to be something different at that point. You know? Or at least they're going to have to do what the X-Men have been doing with just, this is an offshoot here, this is an offshoot here, this is an offshoot here, even though they're all the same.
See, as big as Spider-Man is, though, his supporting cast, I don't think can hold movies on their own.
No, there's no way Black Cat and Silver Sable can hold a movie.
Yeah. I don't think Venom can either, and he's...
Venom probably could. I think Venom probably could. It won't be a big hit. It won't be as big of a hit as a normal Spider-Man movie would be. They'd have to temper their expectations for that one.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
I mean, the X-Men are a team rather than one character, so by virtue of that, they can kind of spread it around quite a lot.
Yeah. And there's multiple teams within the X-Men.
Yeah, there's lots of flexibility there. Whereas Spider-Man is just Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And his supporting cast, one of the better supporting casts in comics, does not have the name drop value that can support a movie.
And why aren't they starting with the Venom movie if they're going to do the side characters, not a Black Cat?
They already announced the Venom movie.
As far as I know, the Venom one is further along than the Black Cat Silver Sable one.
Because that at least has a little more name power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts?
Well, nothing to do with geek culture, but I am super stoked and proud of the Predators for making it to the Stanley Cup Finals.
That is exciting.
Definitely a big moment in franchise history.
Yeah, the sports scene, that's good.
The Titans have been...
They're getting better. That was so long ago.
Oh, yeah, God, that was...
Yeah, we need some of what have you won for us lately.
Fair enough, but I wasn't able to get tickets for the game itself, but I was in the viewing area outside the arena on Monday.
Those tickets are expensive.
Those tickets are expensive. Apparently
nosebleeds were going for $300.
Yeah.
Up on the glass, if you wanted a glass seat, that was $700.
And it's only going to get higher now that we're in the finals.
Now it's Stanley Cup, yeah.
But apparently we figured that if you could get a really good deal on a flight, it would have been cheaper to go watch them in Anaheim, because those tickets were going for like $75.
Really?
Yeah. They just have shitty fans in Anaheim, I guess. Normally I'd apologize to the fine folks of the city of Anaheim, but in this case, you guys can go fuck yourselves, because your team's a bunch of assholes.
And Anaheim, that is in California, am I?
Correct.
Yeah,
all right. Okay. How many other hockey teams are there in California?
San Jose Sharks. LA Kings. Am I missing any? I can't think of any.
You're asking the wrong person.
And,
at least two.
And so you have three teams, and of course we only have the one team here, so there's less division of fandom.
Fair enough. But either way, I was there on the viewing thing outside the stadium in like that park there between the stadium and the Symphony Center. When we scored that first empty netter and you knew we were going to win, that was such an electric atmosphere. It was really cool to be there. It was pretty awesome. I was there with my dad and my sister, and we were all pretty stoked.
Definitely sounds like it was a good time.
It was. I hope that we will have similar success in the finals, although whoever we play, I'm sure will be the underdog, because we've been the underdog this whole fucking time. But
well,
it's
yeah.
been working for us so far.
Do we know who's, or when will we know who we're playing?
Oh, the game is being played right now. It's about an hour in. I imagine they're most of the way through the second. So,
it's Ottawa.
It's either going to be the Ottawa Senators or the Pittsburgh Penguins. They are playing in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is probably the better team. So, if I had to guess, I'm guessing it's going to be the Penguins. But, while Adam's doing his final thought, I will look up that score.
So, for my final thought, yes. Oh, well, this is something we haven't brought up yet. So, Zack Snyder has left the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
Due to some personal reasons. And, Joss Whedon has been brought in to finish directing it. That is a real thing.
It is. It is a sad story.
It is a very sad story.
I'm not sure how much practical impact it's going to have on the movie, though.
Probably not.
As far as I can tell, it's like it was already like
99% done. Right? Yeah, Joss Whedon's not going to do anything different.
Well, that's what. So if the movie is good, he's going to get credit for it. If the movie is bad, people are going to say, "Well, yeah." So this is kind of a win-win for Joss Whedon.
Yeah, either there was nothing he could do, or, you know...
Yeah, I was able to give it that, Matt.
But I really brought this up to just kind of... I don't know. Just to say that, you know, it was no ill will towards Zack Snyder.
Well, certainly not.
Sometimes
there's no words for it, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What happened to make him leave?
I only found out a short time ago. Apparently, his kid committed suicide.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, well, and then, of course, it's rough. So, definitely can understand why he would need to take some time off. But I'd be interested to see the next movie what a Joss Whedon, you know, Justice League 2 would look like.
Well, that's an interesting situation. Justice League 1, like we said, I don't know if there's much to change at this point. As far as I can tell, most of it was already filmed and in the can. But, would you feel comfortable coming into a situation like that where it's not as though the studio or anyone else is like, okay, we need to change direction? How comfortable are you changing the atmosphere, changing the movie?
Right, because the tone is pretty much set for their series.
And does Joss Whedon have any sort of...
Can he be that dark?
Well, I was going to say... Is he really in a position where he should change these things to make it less dark? Make it a more of a quote unquote Joss Whedon movie.
Well, you know, They've already killed Superman, so...
Oh, well, that's, well, if he's making if he's making Justice League 2, he has his chance to kill Superman again, because he'll certainly be back by then.
There's also plenty of other characters for
if
shoot Batman with some time lasers, kill him off.
Yeah. I mean, if Justice League does not end with Superman coming back, I'll be extremely surprised.
Oh, Justice League will end with Superman coming back. That's pretty much a guarantee.
Well, yeah, are they going to have, like struggling. Five versions of him come back?
What I assume is going to happen is they're going to be, like,
death of Superman.
Yeah, they're going to be struggling against Steppenwolf in, just when it seems like things are at their bleakest, Superman pops out of the grave and just punches him in his smug face.
I'm sure he will come back with the black costume, though.
Yeah, oh, well, of course.
Terrible, in fact, horrible black costume.
They haven't even been holding that one close to the chest. Hasn't, like, Henry Cavill been, like, Instagramming
probably.
The black costume
I haven't
photos?
Been following it that closely.
I thought I heard something about
he's
that.
He's a mullet, too. He's gotta have that mullet.
They could do without the mullet.
Hey, man, if you're gonna go 90s, go full 90s.
Some things in the 90s need to stay in the 90s, man.
Yeah. Batman versus Superman should have too, but yeah, no.
Fair enough, but
I think a little bit more mullet. I think a little bit more mullet would have helped that movie.
We need more mullet.
There's something you don't hear every day.
That's because
a little more mullet would have helped.
No one's ever said that without being disingenuous, Larry. Not even once. Mullets are awful. So you got a final thought, Larry?
Well, I did, but, you know, it's been replaced with mullets now. It's
mullet strike again. Claimed another victim.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, there are other things going on outside comics and the gaming news that are the miniature gamings. Warhammer has officially announced their release date for 8th edition.
That's a big deal.
Definitely for those of you that are in miniature wargaming, I'm sure you've heard about it. But for those of you who are not, this is something that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, it is definitely a big deal and reset, you know, where, you know, people... Now, if you play D&D, it happens as often or as less, or maybe even a little less, as a new version of D&D comes out.
How could that work, though? Because I don't think Warcraft is as old as Dungeons & Dragons, but D&D's on 5th edition, whereas you just said it's...
Not Warcraft, Warhammer.
Is Warhammer,
Warhammer
old
is D&D? Older than D&D.
Is it? My mistake.
Yes. In fact, their magazine, White Dwarf... they actually have a review for the new game D&D in like one of their early issues.
That would be an interesting read.
It's
kind of like going back and like reading, like I saw an old review of like Godfather when it first came out.
So how many Warhammer snobs do you have that come in and are like, I only play 3rd edition Warhammer?
Well, not so many.
Are they as obnoxious as D&D fans who only play AD&D.
Geeks are geeks.
I only played 2nd edition.
Yeah.
But, you know, 7th edition's been around for a while.
Back in my day, our characters died every time someone sneezed on them.
And I'm sure that Travis will come over here and explain us how old Warhammer really is, as he is the local Warhammer expert. Yeah, but yes, in the 90s, when they were still doing AD&D, they were doing 2nd or 3rd Warhammer, 3rd edition Warhammer. We were talking about the 8th edition of Warhammer coming out. How old is Warhammer?
Warhammer or Warhammer 40K?
Either or.
40K was 88?
Okay.
Or 89.
What about Warhammer itself?
Fantasy came out.
84?
84?
83?
So 83. White Dwarf predates...
White Dwarf does.
Okay, that's my bad, listeners. White Dwarf is older than D&D, which is the magazine...
No, White Dwarf came around at the same time as D&D.
White Dwarf is Games Workshop's magazine. Games Workshop started out as a store or something.
They came out as a distributor for D&D, basically, in England, is what they were.
So, okay, my bad. I just messed all those dates out.
Okay. I want to say White Dwarf number one was 77?
Yeah. 78, we have a
good
copy.
Good thing we have the experts here.
Yeah.
Well,
40 years, so what's that?
Fix up Larry's mistakes.
Yeah, 77.
Yeah.
He's
40 years old 40 this years. Year.
Yeah. All right, so it would be older than Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, because Advanced Dungeons & Dragons came out in 78. But the original version came out a few... 74. So there you go. So, but yeah, how long has 7th edition been running around? That's been...
It's
only like
2015.
Yeah.
Okay, so this happens way more often than I thought.
Well,
but,
I mean, that's like 4th edition, 5th edition D&D.
From 6 to now, it's been pretty quick.
Right? So we're getting a very quick turnaround this time?
Yeah. And usually it's been about 7 or 8 years between editions.
Yeah, and this one had gotten stagnant. It definitely seemed like they people were falling off from it, and it was definitely ready for a refresh.
Yeah.
How much big changes are there in between editions, usually?
Usually not huge. They're just tweaks.
But this is going to be a much bigger change.
Yeah. The biggest Warhammer 40K change has been from the original to second edition, and then second to third. Those were absolute game-changing, rules-changing. But after that, it was just little small tweaks.
So, for the most part, it's been, going from 3.5 to Pathfinder type
deals? Yeah, much.
Yeah.
And now it's,
this is going to be another big change like
it's
that.
It's an entirely new game, almost. Other than the core mechanics.
The best way I'd put it is AD&D 2nd edition to 3rd edition. It's like that massive change. It's still similar, but it's a big change. It's a big leap.
Okay. I was having a bit of an internal crisis there when you were telling me that... Warhammer was older than D&D, because D&D's reputation is that it's the ultimate godfather of RPGs in general.
Which, is not true. I would say it's the father of the modern role-playing game, but there were other games like that before,
Not really. There were people doing that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but they just didn't call it that.
Right. He didn't come up with a unique, completely 100% unique idea in that there was other games in that genre,
But they were all, the difference here is they were all war games. They were all had the war game mentality. He really made the leap to what we consider a tabletop role-playing game, but there were other people especially Dave Arneson, what was the other guy doing? He was doing a role-playing that inspired Dave Arneson.
Was there something like it was Chainmail or something
there was another guy that played with Dave Arneson in Chicago, and that's where Dave Arneson got the idea for D&D. And I can't remember what his name is or what he called his game, but it was a military, it was miniature war game. They were all miniature war gamers and war gamers. But he, Bronstein, that was the name of his game, but he incorporated role-playing elements into the war game. And what happened is people really took it to the next level. They really created characters, and they were really, calling out duels and challenges with each other. And Dave Arneson got the, kind of took, borrowed things from that. It was like, wait a minute, what if instead of, having a whole army, you just have one guy and go through this labyrinth? And, he just started formulating this idea. I think he actually said he formulated it when he was sick. He had, the flu, and he was watching cheesy sword and sorcery books and stuff, and he kind of came up with that idea, Because there were so many, especially back then, the old the old gaming groups, it was, you know, they were huge. You're talking like, you know, 20, 30 people would show up and they'd all be playing one game. Well, that was hard to do with a miniature war game. And so he came up with that idea of, wait a minute, you know, everybody can have one miniature, one character, and, you know, I can, you can just do this big maze scenario and kill monsters and gain treasure. And it was, you know, and Gary Gygax kind of almost, he took it to the next level. You know, he made it like, wrote out a codified rule set and, you know, everything.
Right. My point is just like Richard Garfield, you know, while he invented trading card games, it wasn't that he invented card games or trading cards, he just put them together in a new way that inspired a whole industry. I've heard people have the argument to try and figure out where the first role-playing game was. But really, I mean, people argue what a role-playing game is and all this other stuff. But, at least point, they both were coming about at the same time. But anyway. So 8th edition is coming out. That's my
off the history lesson.
Of course, that's a lot more in depth than I've studied the subject. It's definitely fascinating.
If you want to do a history of D&D episode, we could do it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
That sounds fun. Yeah,
I mean, I actually have.
I've learned a lot today. Andrew.
Every edition from the beginning to now. We could bring all the books and look at them.
Were you able to get a hold of some of those originals?
I have all of them.
Oh, those are nice.
White box all the way up to now.
See, I haven't. I've only seen the white box for sale at outrageous prices.
I got it for a good deal.
Yeah. I have the original 80s red boxes, red box and all that series. And I used to have a first printing of a lot of the advanced books, but those got destroyed in some of the this is devil stuff purges.
Yeah. I went through that too. I think every kid in the 90s went through this.
But my basic D&D stuff stuck around, so. Which, that was always the version I liked playing the best, just because the rules never seemed to get really in the way.
Yeah, that's still what I prefer to play.
Yeah.
And it all comes full circle.
Yeah.
AD&D snobber. Yeah.
And I know you run a vampire game. That's another good system. The second big vitalization in the 90s. Yeah, vampire booming, yeah.
Well, yeah, World of Darkness kind of took it a step further, you know, because they made role-playing into, like, role-playing. Like, it wasn't just about rolling dice anymore. Yeah. It was more about, like, theatrics and, of course, the LARPing. That made LARPing popular.
I don't know if it was ever popular.
It's pretty, I mean, especially nowadays, it's insanely popular.
Right. But at the time, I don't remember too many popular people out
there. No.
Which,
honest, like World of Darkness brought a lot of people that were not really nerds into role playing, you know, because for that, straight up nerds. But you had other people that, you know, they were interested in acting and, saw a lot more females.
Yeah, they called their LARPing books Mind's Eye Theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which Jim Butcher, a buddy of mine, met him at a LARPing event. Yeah,
I can see that.
You can tell reading his books that he plays a lot of D&D. The characters in the book, in fact, play D&D every now and then.
See, that's crazy. But
a little werewolf D&D group.
Yeah.
Quite funny.
But anyway, that is all for episode 167. I've been your host, Lawrence of America.
Oh, I forgot to mention Samurai Jack had its final episode.
It did.
No time to talk about it now, I guess. I will say that I think it ended well, but I wish they had had two seasons to tell that story instead of one. But I guess you can't help that. I'm glad...
At least it has an ending now.
Yes. I can't tell you how happy I am after, well, like 15 years. Samurai Jack finally gets an ending.
So now that it has an ending, can you put it on your list of best cartoons?
Oh, it was always on the short list. I still can't put it in number one, though, if that was
Come find us out in Madison, Tennessee at Comic City 2, or find us online at comiccity2.com or facebook.com/comiccity2, or on Instagram at comiccity2, or Twitter, and yes, Instagram now. Woo-woo.
You invited me to like Instagram a couple of days ago, I noticed.
Did I?
You did. I'm assuming it was part of a mass invite, but...
Something like that. It said, hey, these people on Facebook are, you know, invite your friends. And I was like, okay, sure. I didn't realize that. I'm sorry if that mass invite offended you.
It's fine. I was just... Now I understand why Larry all of a sudden is...
Oh, did it say Larry invited
you? It specifically said Larry invited you to like Instagram.
Not really a complaint,
just like a...
I did not know that.
I just had a realization as to why now. You know, if not, I'd share that out loud.
Because, my apologies. It was supposed to be Comic City 2 inviting you to like them on Instagram.
Maybe it was Comic City 2, and I just associate you with Comic City 2. Maybe. But I'd have to go back and check.
That makes sense. If you're out there, find us on Instagram. Or check out some of our fine podcasts, or podcasts by our friends over at Outright Geekery and the other hooligans they hang out with. I hear they do podcasts every once in a while.
Like Abe.
Yeah. And Gomer hardly ever mentions them at all. And if you see Jules, ask him where is he. ask him Jules. If he remembers where the shop is.
Yeah. I guess he's busy getting married and everything, but come hang out with us. It's more important.
You know.
At least say hi.
You only got to say a couple words and boom, you're done. There you go. No.
Just reply to a group message. That's all you got to do. Right.
Yeah.
All you really got to do to be married nowadays is update your Facebook status. I mean, you know.
That is how it's legally measured now. When it's Facebook official, they're just like, oh, okay, I guess they're legally married. Okay.
Just check this out. You gotta take a screenshot, you know.
That's how the government does it.
And Snapchat it to the government so they can issue you a marriage license.
Yeah, if you try
the picture went away too fast. Guess you're not married.
Bureaucracy. Yeah. Yeah, which is probably the one we're not on yet. I don't know. It's a waste of time
because it's all temporary on Snapchat.
But you see, corporations have this little Snapchat logo. Snap this. Da-da-da-da. I don't get it. I don't get what's the, you know, the.
Well,
yeah. I mean, I get the concept.
That's what they got over you, Larry. Yeah. They get it. Yeah.
I guess I'm not hip to the scene.
Yeah,
kids these days.
I don't get what Taco Bell has to snap about. You know, I don't get it. Yeah.
Surprise. Got to show off those tacos.
All right. Oh, I forgot to mention it the other day. Was last week or the week before, somewhere in between those two podcasts. Happy birthday, Elaine.
Oh, man, what a missed opportunity.
You know, we would have known that if Jules was here.
Yeah.
I only know because Facebook told me, but yeah.
Fuck you, Jules.